I ask that you speak to us tonight concerning our own lives as we look at Abraham and his involvement and how he lived his life and how he was guided by you. I ask that you just bless it so that it speaks to all of us for our own sake. In Jesus' name, amen. Last week, I quickly tied off with the disgrace of Lot. We looked at Sodom and Gomorrah and all that last week, but I want to take about 5 minutes or so and cover what we did last week at the very end and just kind of look at this. This is after Lot and his wife left Sodom and Gomorrah, and I'm going to start at verse 30. Now Lot went up out of Zoar and dwelt in the hills with his two daughters, for he was afraid to dwell in Zoar, because Zoar was a city and God had already dealt with Sodom and Gomorrah. So he dwelt in a cave with his two daughters. And the firstborn said to the younger, "Our father is old, and there is not a man on earth to come into us after the manner of all the earth. Come, let us make our father drink wine, and we will lie with him, that we may preserve offspring through our father." So they made their father drink wine that night, and the firstborn went in and lay with her father, and he did not know when she lay down or when she arose. And on the next day, the firstborn said to the younger, "Behold, I lay last night with my father. Let us make him drink wine tonight also. Then you go in and lie with him, that we may preserve offspring through our father." So they made their father drink wine that night also, and the younger arose and lay with him. And he did not know when she lay down or when she arose. Thus both the daughters of Lot were with child by their father. The firstborn born a son, called his name Moab. He's the father of the Moabites to this day. The younger also bore a son and called his name Ben-Ammi, and he is the father of the Ammonites to this day. Well, if nothing else, you can read some things in the Bible, and I guess some of our lives could be warnings to other people. I've come to the conclusion that sometimes I've looked at some people's lives and how they've lived, and I said, this should serve as a warning. And I think that in some ways, Lot is like that. We've walked with Abraham for all his life up to this point, but we also walked a little bit with Lot and how he really went down to Sodom and Gomorrah, and it was a cesspool, and those places, and God was going to take that. We watched how Abraham interceded on behalf of Sodom and Gomorrah and ultimately to save Lot in terms of that. But Lot stayed in Sodom and Gomorrah, and the angels literally had to haul him out of there to get him to leave. And Lot it says in the New Testament, he was a righteous man. He was a man who believed in God and essentially had some of the principles or precepts of God. But he always had one foot in the world and one foot in the kingdom. And so when they separated, he and Abraham separated, he went to the city because, hey, we got malls down there and we got all kinds of stuff. Anyway, Sodom and Gomorrah were bad places. They were literally cesspools. And he lived there. I don't know if he thought maybe he could change them a little bit or he just liked that. He had one foot in the world or not. But he went down there and he lived there. And then God dealt with that place. There are six things that I want to point out to you tonight, but I want to begin with looking at Numbers chapter 14, verses 18 to 24, because God has given us some understanding of how we live our lives and what that means. And this talks about the sins of the father. In chapter 14, verses 18 to 24, "The Lord is slow to anger and abounding in steadfast love, forgiving iniquity and transgression. But he will by no means clear the guilty, visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon children." Now, the guilty, you might say here as you look at this, who are the guilty? Well, those are people who don't come to God in repentance, basically. I think that's what he's talking about. But he talks about it. He's abounding in steadfast love, forgiving sin, iniquity, and transgression. But he will by no means clear the guilty, visiting the iniquity of fathers upon children, upon the third and upon the fourth generation. Pardon the iniquity of this people, I pray thee, according to the greatness of thy steadfast love, and according as thou hast forgiven this people from Egypt even until now. Then the Lord said, I have pardoned according to your word. That is, Moses was interceding on behalf of the people of Israel. But truly as I live and as all the earth shall be filled with the glory of the Lord, none of the men who have seen my glory and my signs which I wrought in Egypt and in the wilderness and yet have put me to the proof these 10 times and have not hearkened to my voice shall see the land which I swore to give to their fathers. And none of those who despise me shall see it. But the servant Caleb, because he has a different spirit, has followed me fully, I will bring him into the land which he went. Anyway, the sins of the father are visited upon the third and fourth generations. Now, what that means is that I want you to think about a couple of things. We always talk about this, genetics and environment. And one of the things that happens is if you've got kids and you get irritated at them because of what they do, chances are you ought to probably take a good look at your life back when you were that age too, because chances are you may have brought some of that to them. And is it genetics or is it environment? Good question. Yes, I think it's both. God is talking here about the sins of the father visited upon the children unto the third and fourth generation. That's right. He's the problem, right? those he doesn't forgive are the ones really who don't repent of what they are and what they've done in terms of this. And God says, because of that. Now, he talks about the people that came up out of Egypt. They were in the wilderness for 40 years. The reason they were in the wilderness for 40 years is because 18 months into it, they decided that they couldn't take the land. Even though God had told them, take the land, you can do this. They said, no, there's giants in the land, we can't do it. And so they wandered around the wilderness for 40 years. And God, and I don't know how many times God got angry at them, but a number of times he got angry at them in terms of their actions and the way they were acting. And so he said, here's the deal. None of those people are going to get into the promised land because those sins are going to go carry on. But he says, I'll get the kids in there. In Deuteronomy chapter 5, verses 9 and 10, it basically says the same thing. This is Deuteronomy 5, 9 and 10. You shall not bow down to them or serve them, for I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children to the third and fourth generation of those who hate me. In other words, he says, I mean, there's stuff that comes out of us. Now, you think about families and people and stuff, and if daddy's an alcoholic and a jerk on top of that and everything, that stuff bleeds down into, that is a curse that goes into the children. Now, when those children grow up, some of them may actually become alcoholics, but they may react the other way, but they have the shadow of their father in them in terms of the iniquity of the sin that is passed on. We do this to one another. There are all kinds of family spirits we move down the line. Anyway, so then those kids grow up. Maybe one or two of them become alcoholic, but maybe they don't. Maybe they just have to deal with the sin of that. But what they do is they have children. And those children get part of the shadow of grandpa. And by the time they grow up and the fourth generation comes along, a lot of that bleeds out from that guy back there. Now, that's what he's talking about the sins of the father visit upon the children unto the third and fourth generation. I would just say parents, period, because this stuff goes down the line. And the thing about the sinful nature of us is that's the curse side of us. And between blessings and curses, you know why you always say, well, count your blessings, count your blessings. Well, the reason is that blessings are quiet. So a father could also pass blessings on down, but you don't have to worry about those. You don't think about those because those blessings are things that are in the kids and the grandkids and the great-grandkids, and they carry it on with them, but you don't notice that. But the curses in our lives are loud, and they affect us. Anyway, this is what Lot has done. He's gone down to Sodom and Gomorrah, and he thinks that he can be a virgin in a whorehouse. Right? I mean, it's a cesspool down there. And he says, well, I can live this. I can be God's man in the midst of this. And he tries that, but we watched him. He had to deal with the people of Sodom. Now, let's think about this, because all that stuff accumulates around you. It's the environment in which he lives and his wife lives and the girls live. You just think about what your kids or grandkids get on TV. You know, and we live in these environments. Well, this Lot's bunch lived in this environment. So when they get out of there, when they get out of there and they move down to the Zoar, and then they go up into the hills after Sodom and Gomorrah are destroyed, these girls say, hey, let's just shack up with Dad and maybe we can get some kids from him. That's what they're doing, right? Well, think about it. They probably are. They're living in this lifestyle already. Because of that for years. And they have watched their father live in this lifestyle for years. So they probably don't think much about it. And their father has been living in this world with all these degenerative kinds of thinking and all that goes with the Sodom and Gomorrah. So what happens is the two girls, they pick up on all that corruption that's around them. Now, they don't have to actually have that kind of stuff in the household. But, buddy, they're exposed to it all the time. I mean, if they had any kind of schools back then, you know, they go to the schools and you pick it up. And so they picked up all that corruption. So they see nothing wrong with what they're doing. And that's what I'm running down there. This is what's going on. And if we think that our generation of people that are coming up are going to be any different than this, I don't know what world you're living on. They see nothing wrong with what they're going to do with their father. Then they get Lot drunk, and he doesn't know what's going on. That's the fifth one up there. Drug here, the alcohol is the drug of choice at this point in time. Got it? Let's get him drunk, and it'll steal his wits, and we can do this and get away with it. Because I doubt if he'd do it sober. What do you think? I think Lot would say, I don't know. No, I'm not doing this. But you get him drunk, and he's lost all sense of anything, and we'll get him to do it. Not only that, but they did it twice to him. I would think that the guy would at least have enough wits to figure this out. But no, he doesn't. So that's a principle, by the way. Drugs will steal your wits. You're going to be stupid, son. You better be tough. Anyway. And so the world has its way. Because those girls are just thinking about, oh, this is the world's way. If we don't have kids, we're going to be useless, worthless people. And their own hungers and fears enter into this stuff. And this is what happened, and this is the disgrace of Lot, you might say, in terms of this thing and how this worked, because the kids picked up what mom and dad were living in, even if mom and dad weren't practicing all this stuff. Got it? Okay, that's where we ended last week, and I wanted to cover that real quickly. Now, we got to understand what we're going in. In chapter 20, I'm going to read it to you, and we're going to walk through it after that and pick up on some things that are going on in terms of chapter 20. We're going back to Abraham. Okay, from chapter 18 to the end of chapter 19, we have had this kind of stuff happen. We've had God come and visit Abraham. They have had their meal outside under the tree, and they've done all that. Sarah has had God talk to her, and they have told him that the promise is going to happen, that they're going to have a kid come next spring or whatever it was. And then God was going towards Sodom, and he says, I've got to tell Abraham what I'm going to do. And so he tells Abraham what he's going to do, and then Abraham negotiates with him and gets him down. He says, if you find 50 good guys in the city, don't destroy it, God, because you're a righteous God. And he said, okay, I won't. He said, how about 45? How about 40? How about 30? How about 20? How about 10? And God said, finally, yes to all of those. And finally he says, enough's enough. And that's where you get a minion from, by the way. 10 righteous men. That's the government that used to happen in Israel. Anyway, so they do that negotiation. Then they go down to angels go down to Sodom, and we went through that last week. Now, I don't think a lot of time has passed here. I would say maybe a week or no longer than that. And Abraham stood up there and watched Sodom and Gomorrah be destroyed and all that. So we've had Abraham has had a major encounter with God, has he not? God has showed up. He has talked to him. He's told him that the promise of the child will come to fruition, and he's also told him what he was going to do in Sodom and Gomorrah, and so he's gotten revelation in that. So this has been a big time for Abraham in terms of his meeting with God. And this is what he does right after that. From there, Abraham journeyed towards the territory of the Negev and dwelt between Kadesh and Shur. And he sojourned in Gerar. And Abraham said of Sarah, his wife, she is my sister. And Abimelech, king of Gerar, sent and took Sarah. But God came to Abimelech in a dream by night and said to him, behold, you are a dead man. That would get my attention. Behold, if God's talking to you, behold, you are a dead man because of the woman whom you have taken, for she is a man's wife. Now, Abimelech had not approached her, so he said, Lord, will you slay an innocent people? Did he not himself say to me, she is my sister? And she herself said, he is my brother. In the integrity of my heart and the innocence of my hands, I have done this. Then God said to him in the dream, yes, I know that you have done this in the integrity of your heart. And it was I who kept you from sinning against me. Therefore, I did not let you touch her. Now, therefore, restore the man's wife, for he is a prophet, and he will pray for you, and you shall live. But if you do not restore her, know that you shall surely die and all that are yours. Okay, I'm going to stop there. We'll pick up there in a minute, because I want to walk through some of this stuff with you. Now, you read these stories like this. Do you think about them? I believe this about all of us. If we're willing, the Lord will lead us and show us the path in terms of our lives. And if you're walking in God's will and you really want to be a man or a woman who wants to go as God leads you in terms of how you live your life and what you're supposed to do, He will lead you and He will also show you the path in terms of how that unfolds in your life. But here's the addendum to that. But He doesn't do it all at once. The Lord will open up His will and His way for you, but we mature as we go. I've got a couple of scriptures I want to read to you. One's from Jeremiah and one's from Psalms. Psalm 25, verses 4 and 5. This is a psalm and a kind of a prayer of David's. Make me to know your ways, O Lord. Teach me your paths. Lead me in your truth and teach me. For you are the God of my salvation. For you I wait all the day long. In other words, he's praying that God will show him his ways in terms of how to live his life each day. Jeremiah chapter 29, verses 11 to 13. Where are you, 11? For I know the plans I have for you. People heard this one, haven't you? For I know the plans I have for you, says the Lord, plans for welfare and not for evil, to give you a future and a hope. Then you will call upon me and come and pray to me, and I will hear you. You will seek me and find me when you seek me with all your heart. The Lord will lead us in terms of our lives. He will show us the pathway of our lives, but he doesn't do it all at once either. You know, I don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. I don't know what's going to happen in the next 6 months. I haven't walked there yet. I don't know that stuff. Now, I may have an idea what that might look like, but I haven't traveled there. And the fact of the matter is, if I'd have known 30 years ago what I would be doing today and all the things, that I'd probably run the other way. What I know is that God doesn't show us everything all at once. And in Abraham's life, you have the same kind of thing. You minister to the Lord. We just saw him. He was ministering to the Lord. God was giving him revelation about what he was going to do in terms of Sodom and Gomorrah. We had an intercessory prayer experience with Abraham talking to his friend, God. And God listened to him. And Sodom and Gomorrah happens. And here we have, what does he do? Abraham, you know, godly Abraham, who is obedient and does what God is, he does the same dumb thing he did in chapter 12. You remember that? When he was 25 years younger, I think he was, they went down to Egypt, and what drove them there? Fears and hungers, the two things that work on all of us. If you're afraid of things, it will drive you places. If you have desires or hungers in your life, they'll drive you in terms of that. There was a famine in the land, that's hungers, and they went down there, and he did the same dumb thing that he does here with Abimelech. Now, Abimelech lives in what was now Gaza Strip. It wasn't Egypt. But he goes down to Abimelech and says, "This is my sister." He puts Sarah in jeopardy again. I mean, it is the same dumb thing that he did before in terms of that. You listening, ladies? I mean, you know, yeah. We have a tendency to go back to what, it's like that proverb, a dog returns to his vomit. We have tendencies in us that just because you may be man, God's man or woman, does not mean that you are free from your flesh and the things that drive you. So, after Abraham has experienced this revelation of God, and revelation after revelation, I mean, you know, Abraham is human. again. He's experienced God's glory. He's experienced God's grace. He knows about God's promises for them. But what lurks in the soul is his flesh and the flesh way of doing things, and fears and hungers drive us. And what does he do when he goes down there? He goes down there and says, "This is my sister. Sarah, you make sure you say you're my sister, because I don't want them killing me because of you." Well, that's a real nice husband she's got there, isn't it? You know what? I'd divorce this jerk. But that's exactly what he does. Now, this is God's man. Now, this is the father of the faith. This is the one that that Paul writes about in terms of these things all the time. And what does he do? He does the same dumb thing he did down in Egypt, except now he's in the Gaza area with Abimelech. And he says, "This is my sister." This ought to give you hope with a warning, because Abraham's so human on top of this. I mean, he literally has had an experience with God, but he does the same dumb thing. In verses 4, now Abimelech had not approached her. Abimelech, in a dream by night, said to him, "Behold, you're a dead man because of this woman whom you have taken, for she is a man's wife." I'll tell you what, that would get me up out of the bed. I don't know about you guys, but that's a nightmare. Have you ever had those kind of nightmares? I've had a few of these nightmares where you wake up after a couple minutes, you say, "Thank God it's a nightmare. I'm not living that." Well, Abimelech gets this from him. And he says, "Hey, Lord, you know, he told me she was his sister, and she herself said he is my brother, so what's going on here?" And then God said to him in a dream, "Yes, I know that you have done this in the integrity of your heart, and it was I who kept you from sinning against me. Therefore, I did not let you touch her. Now, restore this man's wife, for he is a prophet, and he will pray for you, and you shall live. But if you do not restore her, know that you shall surely die, and all that is yours." Now, why did you do this? Let me read on. So Abimelech rose early in the morning. I don't think the guy fell asleep after that. What do you think? He's probably pacing his room, and he got up early, all right. And he called all his servants and told them all these things. And the men were very much afraid. So he's got the whole household in an uproar at this point in time. Then Abimelech called Abraham and said to him, "What have you done to us? And how have I sinned against you that you have brought on me and my kingdom a great sin? You have done to me things that ought not to be done." And Abimelech said to Abraham, "What were you thinking?" What were you thinking? My mother did that to me a lot. "What were you thinking of that you did this thing?" And Abraham said, "I did it because I thought there is no fear of God at all in this place, and they will kill me because of my wife." Why did he do it? Fear. You need to hear this, because why? This is a man of God. He's had a revelation with God. He's walked with God several times over the last 25 years. And we've been studying this. And why does he do it? Because he is afraid. He is living strictly horizontally at that point in time. And he says, because these people are people of the world, they don't fear you, God. Now, Abraham is the giant of the faith, folks. And if you read in the New Testament, he's the one that they always look to, the father of the faith. And what is he doing here? He's saving his own life. And I tell you what, that ought to tell us something about us. He tries to save his own life. And how does he do it? By selling his wife off. This is the guy they talk about all the time, you know, the man of faith. Now, one of the things that we hear all the cliches from church and everything, and we hear what Jesus says, you know, you need to die to self in order to save your life and all this stuff. And boy, we all nod in church, won't we? But the thing that I know is it is very hard. It's almost impossible to quit trying to save your own life. We do it. We can't help it. So Abraham devises a plan to save himself, and all he's doing is the same dumb thing he did back in chapter 12, which was 25 years ago. And so what he's doing is he projects his own fear onto others. He projects that fear not only onto Sarah, but he does it to the entire household of Abimelech, too, is what he's doing. And so what he does affects everybody around him. If you are God's man or woman in the world, you need to understand about fears and hungers and how they drive us and how difficult it is to die to self a lot of the times. And what do we do instead? We'll sell somebody else down the stream. And that's exactly what Abraham is doing here. Now, so he devises this plan to save himself. And he projects his fear onto others. And our fears can become attached to others in the household. Abraham's covering nature, we talked about him as being the covering for Lot and actually all these people because he's God's man and he's supposed to be the one who covers them in terms of their spiritual life but also their physical life and everything. Well, let me tell you something. Abraham's covering nature at this point is full of holes as far as I can tell, and the weather's coming in on all his family and everything is. And so what happens is instead of being a blessing to Sarah and everybody else that he's responsible for, and also where he goes to visit here down in Gaza, he becomes a curse. And let me tell you, there's something we can learn from this, because when we get afraid, or when we have hungers or desires that we want to deal with, but fear is the main killer here, what we do is we project that stuff onto everybody around us, and we can become a curse. Now, what were you thinking of, Abraham? You're thinking of yourself. That's what you're thinking of, period. Verse 11, Abraham said, I did it because I thought there's no fear of God at all in this place, and they will kill me because of my wife. Besides, here it comes. I didn't lie. She is indeed my sister, the daughter of my father, but not the daughter of my mother. Sounds like a modern story to me. And she became my wife. And when God caused me to wander from my father's house, I said to her, this is a kindness you must do me at every place to which we come. Say of me, he is my brother. Shoot him, Sarah. I mean, what does he do? He self-justifies himself. I didn't really lie. She's sort of my sister. She's a half-sister. You know, he didn't really lie. So he's using his human logic and rationale here, like we always do. And so he says, besides, she is indeed my sister. That's human logic right there. I said, never mind the fact that I set her up for failure here, and I set her up and put her in jeopardy. She sort of is. When God caused me to wander from my father's house. Wait a minute. When God caused me to wander from my father's house, God said, I want you to go to the place where I tell you to. And he did it obediently. Okay? But I guess you can blame God for it if you really want to. Right? You can put the blame on God. Oh, God made me take this journey. He put me into this. And oh, I don't know how many times I've heard people say, you know, it's God's fault because I'm here. Oh, really? And usually what happens is it's fears and hungers. Always is. It's just the way we are, you know. So Abe's covering nature for Sarah and his family is negative, and he's actually like a curse. Verses 14 to 16. Then Abimelech took sheep and oxen and male and female slaves and gave them to Abraham and restored Sarah, his wife, to him. And Abimelech said, behold, my land is before you. Dwell where it pleases you. To Sarah he said, behold, I have given your brother 1,000 pieces of silver. It is your vindication in the eyes of all who are with you and before everyone. You are righted. Now, what he's doing is Abimelech says, I'm taking care of this because I don't want to be a part of this. Because God had told him. Now, this is a heathen, folks. He's a heathen telling the Christian what's wrong with him and doing something. And God talks to the heathen. He doesn't talk to Abraham. Okay, there's a couple of things we can learn from this. And he's a man laden with fear. And let me tell you, fear will drive us. The revelation of God yesterday doesn't stop the repetition of self today. I don't care how big God may have been in your life and how much of a mountaintop you experience you've had in your life, you still better keep in and understand that you are human. And you have all that goes with that. You have a sinful nature. You have hungers and fears that drive you, and you need to be aware of that. The revelation of God, I don't care if you've been to the mountain, been to the burning bush, and God has told you the whole history of the world and laid it all on you, it doesn't stop the repetition of self, your humanity. So I tell you, one of the things that we can learn from Abraham here is he does the same dumb thing he did before, is to walk in humble and wise caution in your life, and it doesn't matter how old you are either. It doesn't matter. Revelation does not preclude repetition of the flesh. You know, you still have to discipline you. And what happens is the point of victory in your life actually could become a point of defeat. You know, the story of Samson, I did a study on it. And this is another one of these guys that kind of like Lot in the fact that even a bad example can give you a warning. Well, Samson is one of the judges of Israel, and he's in the 13th to 16th chapter of Judges. And I talked about this. What we always know about him is that Delilah cut off his hair, right, and he lost his strength. Well, that's not true either. If you ever see the movie Fitzwillie with Dick Van Dyke in it, you'll find out that that's not true. Delilah just got a maidservant to come in and cut his hair. She didn't do it at all. And he made a lot of money at a bar doing that particular story, making a bet that says, I bet you that Delilah didn't cut Samson's hair, and everybody took him up on it, and he just made a ton of money. Anyway, that's beside the point. Anyway, Samson, though, was a Nazarite, okay? His mother dedicated him to the Nazarite form of the Israeli faith. Anyway, Nazarites are kind of like, maybe it might be Amish people or Mennonites or something like that. The people that have a special kind of order, and they can't, they have to always wear dresses, or they can't cut their hair, or these kinds of things. Well, Nazarites had three things that they weren't supposed to do. And, you know, as Christians, you might live under a form of the Christian faith that says you can't do this. Like, Roman Catholics had this thing about not eating meat on Friday. That was, you know, that's part of what they do, you know. And Southern Baptists down in Kentucky couldn't drink alcohol, at least they said they couldn't. But, you know, I'm probably, you can't do that. Can't do that kind of stuff. Okay, so, but that comes with a particular set. Well, the Nazarites had a particular set of things that they did in terms of their relationship with God and their covenants and that they dealt with. One is you touch no dead thing. The second one is you don't drink, no alcohol. And the third was you don't cut your hair. Okay, well, so Samson, we get the story about him getting his hair cut, and that's the part we remember. But the fact of the matter is, he had a three-cord compromise or covenant that was going on with God because of his Nazarite background. Touch no dead thing. Now, if you know the story of Samson, what did he do? He got the honey out of the dead lion, and he touched it. That was when he broke the first cord. The second thing is he was a party dude. He threw parties all the time. So he always broke the no drinking one. So the third one was don't cut the hair. So when the third cord was cut, then the covenant was broken between him and God. And that's what compromised him. And one of the things that I know is that we, in terms of all of our lives, I think that there is this kind of stuff, that if you're walking with God, your universe, your world, whatever makes up your world, and that's on the inside and on the outside, is that more than likely you have made deals with God in terms of how you live your life and things like that. And it may have nothing to do with the guy sitting next to you or the girl sitting next to you. It has to do with you, okay? And these are things that you and God have. And if you compromise those or break those covenants, it will literally almost sap your spiritual strength. It may not have anything to do with me or what I think is important for my life, but for your life, this is important. This is what you do with God. Well, anyway, this is one of the things that we're looking at, is that Abraham has basically compromised himself by going to Gaza, and because of his fear, he's put his Sarah in jeopardy. And God, it's almost like God flips a switch and goes negative on him. And it's an important thing that, let me read this to you. Where was I reading in terms of the prophet? He is a prophet. He will pray for you and you shall live. But if you do not restore her, know that you will surely die. Now, basically God is telling Abimelech, this is a man of God. This is my man. And he is a prophet. And he will pray for you. If you don't do this. So that's what happened. Then Abraham prayed to God. This is verse 17. Prayed to God, and God healed Abimelech and also healed his wife and female slaves so that they bore children. For the Lord had closed all the wombs of the house of Abimelech because of Sarah, Abraham's wife. Well, one of the things that we look at here is that Abraham has gone from a high point of revelation to thinking like the flesh. thinking on a horizontal level, only on a world level, rather that and his own fears have driven him. And the fears of our heart, though, does not have to stop the flow of our lives. This is what's good about this, if the good side of this, is that even though Abraham does this dumb thing and is ruled by his fears, God covers him. That is good to know. You know, there's an old saying that God takes care of fools and drunks and fools. I don't know which care I get or I fall into, but occasionally, you know, but it's the general flow of God's purpose will not necessarily be stopped because you do a dumb thing. You need to hear me. Now, I wouldn't test that. But you can do a dumb thing because you're ignorant and you're stupid, okay? I don't know. If you do things intentionally, it gets a little hairier at that point in time, I think. But anyway, God's purpose, the general flow of God's purpose will not be stopped because of what you do that might be stupid at some point. His purpose for you, his plan for your life, what he thinks of you in terms of how that's supposed to flow cannot be stopped by being stupid. Now, what we think is that we have to get our security in this life by the flesh, don't we? And all you have to do is go out there in the business world, and it's all about what goes on in the business world, and it's all about how you conduct business out there, and it has nothing to do with God up there at all. But I'm here to tell you that's the way the humanity thinks. God's people have to have some kind of vertical thought in the midst of this, in terms of this. And at this point in time, Abraham has forgotten God in the whole scheme of things. It's almost like God has become a myth to him. And I have seen this too, and I've experienced it. When you get into tight situations and you're afraid and things like that, you know how we think? We think strictly horizontal. We do not think up there until we get in a real deep place. And then we'll turn our look up there where you have to rely on God because you can't get it done and this world can't seem to get it done and your life is on the line. Then maybe that's when that's when they roll over in the gutter and look up. But we don't do that normally. And the more we'll do everything else first. As I said, it is very hard for us to die to self. Very hard. We cry out to God, don't take my life. We don't believe as much when things are tight, do we? I run into people who face all kinds of things. They can face illness, they can face financial issues, they can have relationship problems, they can have all kinds of things. Stuff going on in their life. And you know what we do? We just forget about God. We don't believe. You know, you might believe it here, but when you walk out there in your world and things are going a little hairy on you, we can't seem to walk on faith. But the problem is, what is faith? Faith is not knowing. And there are hundreds of things out there that will get in our face, and flesh thinks that all these things we think are important in this life. Oh, do we not have them? And that's what happens here. And you got a real picture of this. Another thing that's going on here, and this is part of who we are. You have to be willing to let go. Or give up. But the more entrenched we are, the more prone we are to protect with worldly values the things that are around us. We had a really good example of this when we were getting ready to move from Woodland over here. Those people who were longtime members of Woodland, and I got one or two of them here, had a much harder time letting go than people who had come in the last 1 or 2 or 3 years, because that ground, that building, meant so much. And what they were doing was they were holding on to, they were prone to protect what they already had. And they had moved from what I call stewardship of life to ownership. And it happens. I've seen this happen in people's lives where they move from stewardship to ownership of things. Well, we're called to be stewards of our lives, but we move to ownership because we're entrenched in it and we're more prone then to protect the worldly things that we have. You have to get to the point where it doesn't matter, but that is, it is very hard to die to self. Do you hear me? I mean, really, that's what Jesus said. You know, he who dies to self or gives his own life will find it. Well, let me tell you something. That is so hard to do. We can go here, we can sit in church and not about that, but I'm here to tell you, when it comes to you, you'll say, you can do that, but I don't think I can do it because it's just too much. And the more entrenched we are at saving ourselves, the more we do that. When you quit shielding and saving your life and just let loose and say, Lord, it's yours, that's a long time coming, if ever, in our lives. It is something that is a constant lesson that we have to kind of pick up. We save our life and we lose something. Now, I want you to think about what Abraham almost lost here. He almost lost his wife, Sarah. And he almost jeopardized her honor and her chastity and all that goes with it. But he also lost respect. He lost his sense of responsibility. He lost, in a lot of ways, his faith and trust in God. He forgot about God, that he was his shield and defender. And there's a lot of stuff that's going on here that in terms of what he was losing as this happened and he gave into his fears. Now, as I say, God talks to us all our lives, and he doesn't tell us everything that's going to happen to us, and he hasn't told you everything that's going to happen to you in terms of your life, and it's a good thing because you probably couldn't handle it anyway, but he does that. But I want you to think about, what is God doing with Abraham and Sarah at this point? He is building something in terms of their life, in terms of the promise that he has for them and what they're going to be in the future through and what's coming through them. So what does God do? He took care of Abraham in his weakness, in his sin against Sarah. And Abraham, and God is pushing Abraham to a place of higher revelation and higher purpose in terms of his life. Because all that Abraham thinks about is two things. The place that he has in this life that has to do with his stuff and everything and all that goes with that. And his purpose, which is, I have no heir to what I am. And God is actually pushing him along in this thing. You need to understand this a little bit more than you're thinking about. There is higher revelation here, and there's higher purpose than even you can imagine, Abraham. And he's been working with him, but after all that, the same dumb me. The overruling covering of God will cover you if you are committed to God's will. That's one thing you can learn out of this. If you are committed to God's will, if you want to be his man or woman in this world, he will cover you even in your stupidity and doing the dumb things. He'll even cover you in sin. I would not flaunt that, but he will. And if there is purpose for your life that he wants you to have, you can't miss it. Now, our flesh wants self-preservation. It always does. And it lurks in me. It lurked in Abraham. It lurks in you. And I know that truth. You know, for somebody it might be money. For somebody it might be their kids. Or somebody it might be a place where they live. We got as many things, professions, ambitions, and all this stuff. These things move us in terms of us. The flesh still lurks. And Abraham's heart, though, belongs to God. What about your fears? You know, what about them? You know, well, verse 3 has a couple of words that are, I think, there are the greatest words sometimes in the Bible. When you find them, it says, but God. Abraham doing a dumb thing and everything, but God. Those are great words, actually. Jack, you're doing stupid stuff out there, but God saw it. Now, I want you to think about something else that's going on here, because Abraham is God's man. We're walking in his life, right? But there are other people around Abraham, and God has a purpose for their life as well as his. Now, he has a high purpose in terms of what he is going to be, but I want you to think about this. Sarah is a real person. God has even talked to her now when she was in that tent and said, you're going to be pregnant. And she laughed because she was past the age. But Sarah's involved in this, and Abraham has put her on the plank, so to speak. Say, you could die for me. Not only that, but you've got a heathen out there. Anybody here work with heathens? I mean, I have been around them all of my life. Heathens. People who don't, they sort of believe in God, but you don't know, you're not even sure what they believe. Well, Abimelech's out there. And notice that God talks to the heathen. And he says, by the way, son, if you take that woman, I'm going to kill you and everything in your household, and that would get me up in the middle of the night. But these people have lives. There is a purpose for the life of Abimelech. Sarah has a purpose. You know, think about this. God had told Sarah that you're going to have a child in the spring at the right time. And Abraham knows this, right? And yet, he jeopardizes her. What an idiot. And that's the best you can say about the man. What an idiot. There's high purpose in Sarah as well. Abimelech actually comes to play in another place. And this has to do with the sins of the father of Isaac upon this second and third and fourth generations, when Isaac does the same thing that his father does. He tries to sell Rebekah to Abimelech, the same guy, same guy. And Isaac hasn't even been born yet. That's genetics, boys and girls, flowing right on through. If you have problems with your children, you ought to take a look at yourself in the mirror, because chances are you're part of the problem. Anyway, that, you know, God says, stop it to a heathen. And that'll get your attention. You know, and Abimelech comes in and says, what were you thinking? You call yourself a Christian and you're going to do this kind of stuff to me? I've had people say that to me, heathens. Or I've heard them say it about some of you. You call yourself a Christian, you're going to do that? You idiot. But we defend ourselves, and so does Abraham. He's, well, she's my sister, sort of. So they're redeeming them. And the integrity of Abimelech, you got to understand, he may be a heathen, but this is a man who has integrity of heart. He's a man, you know, that he does, he wants to do what is right, and he says, I do not want this woman as part of my problem. He does this for a pagan. You know, I don't know about you, but I've heard stories, I've also had it happen to me, where what I would classify as a heathen out there has said something to me, and it got my attention because it was almost like that person was God's voice to me in the midst of my own stupidity. What were you thinking? My mother said that so many times, I don't know. What were you thinking, Abraham? Integrity of heart. Dumb Abraham. Now listen, 17 and 18. Well, we got to quit. Abraham prayed to God. God healed Abimelech and also healed his wife and female slaves so that they bore children. For the Lord had closed all the wombs of the house of Abimelech because of Sarah. One of the things that I want to say here very quickly is, what are the issues in Abraham and Sarah's life? Barrenness is one of those. She cannot have children. She is past that age. And notice what happens is the issue and the problem of Abraham and Sarah is visited upon that entire household of Abimelech. Barrenness was the problem. It is part of the issues of Abraham and Sarah that happens. And God moves in this, and he must have closed the wombs while they were there because they were out of line being down there. But God moves in, and Abraham prays. And he had told Abimelech this. This guy's a prophet, buddy. He'll pray for you, and he'll do it. And in that barren situation, and it was also Sarah and Abraham's barren situation, God moves and redeems and breaks the self-preservation in Abraham, and then takes care of the barrenness that is in that family that he's told he's going to. And let me read to you two verses as we close this thing. Chapter 21, the Lord visited Sarah as he had said, and the Lord did to Sarah as he had promised, and Sarah conceived and bore Abraham a son in his old age at the time of which God had spoken to him. And what you have is that there is a breakthrough that takes place here in when Abraham does his dumb thing down there. And there's a breakthrough. And all, and when it comes to conception and things like that, there has to be a breakthrough. We'll close there and we'll come on to this next week. Let's pray. Lord, I ask that to anything I said tonight that's worthy of your name,